Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond along with Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, man?
What's going on, fellas? How are y'all on this Friday evening?
Fantastic. Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
Not a whole lot. Looking forward to talking some football.
No doubt about it. I've got a great show, but we've got a great friend of ours, so we'd like to have it back and on. And there's a big one of the two big games on Sunday to talk about, right, Bubba?
Yeah, we got the conference championship games, of course, this weekend on Sunday, and you got the Green Bay Packers hosting the Tampa Bay Bucks, and then you also have the Buffalo Bills on traveling to Kansas City, and we'll talk about that one later on with Don Beebe, a conversation that we recorded a couple days ago, and then we'll also later on have Brian Kane as we talked a little East Carolina baseball, and then touched on the psychological side of performing in a big game. But right now, I'm very excited to welcome in East Carolina great and Green Bay Packers great, Dr. George Koontz. George, welcome back to the program.
I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, George. It's very excited about Sunday and with the games. And first of all, how do you feel about out of the gate, the extra two playoff with the wild cards, with expanding the playoffs to 14 teams? Were you in favor of keeping it 12, or are you happy with 14?
I'm happy with 14. I'm just a huge football fan, so the more football I have a chance to consume, the better for me.
No doubt. It gave us that first weekend. It gave us three games on Saturday and three games on Sunday, and then I assume that's more money, right, for the NFL?
Well, it's all about sponsors and television and people watching the game. And so 2020 was a tough year from an attendance standpoint. So I think it's a great opportunity for the NFL and the organizations to kind of recoup some of the money that they've lost, because like the Packers and so many other teams in the National Football League, they didn't have any fans during the season.
It's really difficult. And, the college football folks that are saying that it's too many teams, we got to keep it at four. Well, the NFL has 14 out of 32 now teams. So I think the NFL is doing just all right.
Yeah, I think the NFL has an unbelievable business model. I know that the Packers, I've been very honored and privileged to be on the Packers board of directors, because the Packers are owned by 360,000 individuals. And it's governed by a 43-person board. And I've been extended that opportunity over the last couple years to serve on the board. So it was tough on the organization, but they've been able to power through it from an economic standpoint.
No doubt. What about as far as the merchandise sales? How have the merchandise sales been? I know that's one revenue stream that's got to help you, right?
That's a great question, because the Packers typically are number two in merchandise behind the Dallas Cowboys. Let me kind of give you a perspective on that. After our last playoff game, we had a $42,000 hour of individuals buying merchandise.
Is that just like when you say a $42,000 hour of individuals buying merchandise, is that from the official team store online? Or
yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep, their website. So let's just say if the game ended at 3:30, from 3:30 to 4:30, there was $42,000 sold in just that 1 hour alone.
And that's just at the official team store. Think about all the other places.
Oh, wow.
People are buying Packers merchandise. Good Lord.
Yep.
I mean,
that's like at Walmart or Target or whatever.
Oh,
yep.
Man, that's crazy.
That's a lot of money. And you always see, here in Eastern North Carolina, you obviously see Panthers merch and Redskins, well, not Redskins, football team merch. But now, along with that, you always see, as you mentioned, Cowboys and Packers. You can always see Cowboys and Packers merchandise for sale pretty much anywhere in America.
I would agree.
George, before we talk about this matchup, you talk about being on the board of directors. obviously there are things that you can't talk about, but tell us what you can on the craziness of the last 10 months. What are some of the issues and you know, just fine details that the board of directors that you guys have been combing through?
Well, we've all the challenges and issues that the Packer organization have had is no different than the Bears, the Panthers, the Washington football team, or the Cowboys. But what makes it unique for the Green Bay Packers is because we don't have an owner. Like I said earlier, we have over 360,000 owners, shareholders. And so we really have to be attuned to the business side because we don't have anyone personally to kind of bail us out if there is a tough situation like what has happened in 2020 with the COVID-19 virus. So, but with that being said, because of the leadership and because of being very business savvy over the last 28 years, an organization like the Packers, the only professional franchise out of 120, 130 franchises in America to be a public-owned franchise, we were able to weather the storm a little bit.
George, obviously, you played in several playoff games for the Panthers, and normally for the Packers, yep. And normally, obviously, that huge home field advantage at Lambeau. I don't know if they're still not allowing any fans at all in there, but if they are, it's very few. Talk about, you know, obviously you're still the frozen tundra. It's still, you know, some boys from Tampa Bay coming up to play in Green Bay, Wisconsin. So there's still going to be somewhat of a home field advantage. But you know, talk about how you think, obviously your experience playing the playoff games with the big crowds and how different you think it'll be with these playoff games with no fans, you know, different atmosphere.
It's going to be, from a weather perspective, it won't be that bad on Sunday. I know Tampa Bay is coming in from 75, 80 degree weather, but I think it's supposed to be around 29, 20, 28 at kickoff. And a lot of people may say, well, that is cold. But when you first started off the question, you said when I was with the Panthers in the playoffs, You had that right. We played the Panthers.
Yeah, I remember that.
1997, after the 1996 season, and the temperature on that day, it was -17. So, 29 degrees, -17. It could be bad, and I think that game was January 13th, and I think on Sunday it's going to be January 22nd, maybe. So, it's going to be, I think the conditions are going to be pretty good for this time of year in Wisconsin. And I just think what may be an issue, and we'll see on Sunday, is the wind. And I don't really want the wind to be a factor because that can affect both teams. So I just wanted to be nice conditions and they just go out there and both teams just give it their all and see who earns the right to go to Super Bowl 55. That's going to be in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, hey, I don't want to make it the weather forecast, but I do have a follow-up to that. How do you function to play football in -17 degree weather? I don't know that I could stay outside to do anything for 3 hours in -17 degree weather.
Well, one of the things that I had to learn coming from Eastern North Carolina, growing up in Craven County, and coming to the Midwest was trying to adjust to the weather. But what I found to be successful in a lot of, and basically all of my teammates was putting the proper layers on, and each individual is unique. So you may have on thermals. I may not need thermals, but I may need three pairs of socks, but you only wear one. So things like that we worked on during the season, getting prepared and getting acclimated to the weather, because it could be an issue if you're not used to it.
Yeah.
Talking about that very thing with the weather, how much of a factor will it play, do you think, when it comes to the team in Tampa Bay? As you're talking about, if say if it's 75 degrees and they're coming to Lambeau and it's 29, how much of a factor will that affect the team in Tampa Bay?
It could be a factor. Let me reverse that. I remember going to Tampa Bay in September. It seemed like the NFL used to schedule the Packers going to Tampa Bay because they were in our division, and we used to play Tampa Bay twice a year back in the 90s. It was called the NFC Central. Now it's called the NFC North. But we used to go down to Tampa in September, and it used to be 85, 90 degrees. And I remember going down, it was 87, 85 degrees, and I struggled getting adjusted. And I was coming from 70 degree weather in Wisconsin, but that heat and that humidity, I wasn't used to it. And I grew up there I grew up in North Carolina my whole life, but that weather was difficult on me. So if it had that effect on me and a lot of my teammates going from a cooler climate to Tampa, if that was an issue for us, it may be an issue for them coming from a hot climate to a cooler one.
George, I'm going to have to get off the show here and hand it over to Dave and Bubba. So I wanted to close it out for my part with one more question and tell you thanks for coming on. But we were talking before the podcast about Tom Brady, and I admittedly, you know, I've always thought Tom Brady was a great quarterback, but I doubted how great he was. I gave Belichick a lot of credit. And, you know, said it was the system up in New England, blah, blah, blah. Well, he proved me and any other doubters wrong this year for what he's done year one in Tampa Bay. I think, you know, he may be the greatest quarterback to ever play the game at this point. What are your thoughts on Tom Brady and what a great quarterback he truly is?
I think that your assessment is can be right on the money. It could be both. It can be that Belichick is the best coach of all time, and Tom Brady is the best quarterback of all time. But I had a chance to play with a guy with Brett Favre for 8 years in Green Bay. I played against him twice when I was at East Carolina. So I've had a chance to be around some pretty good quarterbacking over my career. But I would say that Tom Brady is the best quarterback of all time. I think he has the resume, and he has the numbers to show it. It was a great partnership that he had with Belichick. So I just hope that he's a little off on Sunday when he's playing against the Packers. But I would admit that he is the best. And going to Tampa Bay and accomplishing what he has accomplished in his first year in a new system, new city, new environment. It's just unbelievable.
No doubt. How about 14, George? What's the magnitude of having 14 championship games, 13 with the Patriots and the AFC championship games, and now one with NFC? It's just hard to fathom that many championship games. If you have one or two, I would imagine your career, you're lucky, and to have 14 is just incredible.
Right. So let's just say if you play, the average football career is 3.5 years. So let's just say if you're blessed to play 10 years and you went to two NFC championship games, that would be an amazing accomplishment. We all know Tom Brady has played about 21 years, but to go to 14 championship games, that will never happen again. Let's just say someone goes to 7. That would be unbelievable. Going to 7 is, that's off the charts. So you can only imagine what 14 looks like.
And he has what, double the amount of wins in the playoffs, George, than any other quarterback in the history of the NFL? I mean, even that's, he's way above everybody else in that category.
Yep. And on top of that, he's from what I've seen and heard and witnessed, his leadership skills is just amazing.
And George, we talk about Tom Brady, but let's talk a little about Aaron Rodgers. It's tough as a, you know, you always hear as a coach, and you don't want to be the man that follows the man. And Aaron Rodgers, you know, it's amazing the continuity with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers that the Packers have had at the quarterback position. So just talk about Aaron Rodgers.
I think Aaron Rodgers is just from quarterback and and let's not talk about a team accomplishment, but just the quarterbacking, he may be the best. He is unbelievable. His accuracy. I think he had, 48 touchdowns this year, 5 interceptions. I think he has a great opportunity to be the MVP of the National Football League in 2020. That would be 3 MVPs that he's had over his 16-year career. I think 13 as a starter. So he's unbelievable. Having a chance to watch him each and every Sunday here in Wisconsin has really truly been a great opportunity. I've been blessed to be part of a great organization. I think over the last 28 years, the Packer organization have had the MVP 6 times, if Aaron were to win it for 2020. No organization has had that in over a 28-year period. I think Peyton Manning may have had 4 in Indianapolis and 1 in Denver. But Tom Brady may have had 3 or 4 MVPs. But as a organization, Aaron Rodgers would have 3 and Brett Favre had 3. So that would be 6 over a 28-year period. So I've had a chance to watch some phenomenal quarterbacks over the last 28 years.
Absolutely, no doubt. And, you know, looking at this matchup specifically, you know, how do you see this one playing out? These two teams had met back earlier in the year, back, I guess, mid-October, with Tampa Bay winning down in Tampa 38-10. But that was just kind of I don't think you can put a whole lot of stock in that one as far as how things are going to play out on Sunday afternoon. But what were your takeaways from that first matchup?
That first matchup, the Packers jumped out at, I think, the first quarter, 10-0. And Aaron Rodgers threw a pick 6, and everything changed. And I think they ended up blowing the Packers out 38-10, like you said. But it was the only game of their season in 2020 that was like that. The Packers went 13-3, and out of those 3 losses, the game against Tampa Bay was pretty brutal. But I think the guys have learned a lot from that game, and hopefully they can make the corrections necessary to adjust and to play well on Sunday in the NFC Championship in Lambeau.
Now, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but just on the season, I think the Packers are probably, on the whole, maybe rush the ball a little bit better than the Bucks. I may be mistaken on that, but you were talking about the wind potentially being a factor. What do you see there as far as the running game of each team versus the run defense?
Well, I think Tampa has a really good running game. And the Packers have a phenomenal running game as well, led by number 33, Aaron Jones. So one thing about the Packers and the Bucks, they're very balanced. So you just can't key on the running game and think, take the running game away and you think you're going to be successful. You have to be able to stop the run and the pass, and hopefully whichever team is able to do those two things on Sunday well, are going to prevail with the win.
Now, what about the other matchup taking place down in Kansas City with the Chiefs, obviously looking to become the first team to repeat since the New England Patriots did so back in the 2003 and 2004 seasons. And then you have the Bills and Sean McDermott, an organization that has largely struggled since being so dominant in the AFC in the early 90s, re-emerging onto the scene.
It's great to see the Buffalo Bills because I remember playing the Bills in the early 90s. I think they went to the Super Bowl 92, 3, 4, and 5. I know they had a four-year window, and they had some great players. And to see Josh Allen and the players that they have now and the coach to revive that organization is good to see. But they're going into a tough place. I've had a chance to play in Kansas City a couple times as a player, and it's tough. But, Andy Reid, Coach Andy Reid, the head coach, we lived in the same neighborhood in Green Bay for 7 years. Great guy. Great strategist. And he has perhaps one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League, a young Patrick Mahomes. So that's going to be a great game. And I just hope to see Super Bowl 55 as a repeat of Super Bowl I, in which the Green Bay Packers played the Kansas City Chiefs in Los Angeles in 1966. So hopefully it's a repeat of that. Super Bowl 55 would be a repeat of Super Bowl I. But the Packers got to hold up their end of the deal, and the Kansas City Chiefs got to hold off the Buffalo Bills, which is going to be a challenge because the Buffalo Bills have a great defense.
You know, George is a defensive player. You obviously very in tune with what's taking place down through the years or in the NFL. But just talk about the way the game has changed as far as the number of plays that are run and some of the influence that you've seen from the college game impacting the NFL, and as far as different schemes with RPOs and read option and different things like that.
Yep, the NFL, there has been some spillage from college. I think that the tempo is more up tempo in the National Football League, kind of mimicking what you see in college. I think when I was as a player in the National Football League, it was probably around the average game had about 60 plays per team. Now it's probably close to 70. So things are much faster. Football seems to me like basketball on grass, and it's good to see things evolving. So so from a defensive standpoint, you have to have a lot of speed, and a lot of agility to be able to keep up with that pace of the offenses in college and in the National Football League.
Absolutely, no doubt. And I know you said hopefully that we'll see that rematch between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Green Bay Packers. But, you know, what are you thinking as far as just that matchup? And how do you think it will play out? Do you think Kansas City will be victorious?
Kansas City Chiefs are tough. I would love to say, you know, the Packers come out on top. But I don't know. Two great head coaches, two great quarterbacks, both defenses are playing well. I think if the Packers are fortunate to get to the Super Bowl, I think it would come down to turnovers. Because I remember we went to our second Super Bowl in a row when I was with the Packers. And we went out to San Diego to play the Denver Broncos, and we were a 10-point favorite, the highest point spread of any Super Bowl at that time, and that was Super Bowl 32, and we lost. So you can never say that a team is guaranteed to win. And so a lot of people may pick the Chiefs, but the Packers – You can never count them out. You can never count that team out. It's all about, you know, turnovers.
And one thing, I mean, not that this is
no doubt, George.
Go ahead, Dave.
Sorry, I was going to mention the very fact that the AFC Championship. This is the third straight, right, for Kansas City. So experience does matter, right, George?
Yep, it's all about it. Experience, and it's all about it's all about those turnovers. You look at the New Orleans Saints. Tampa went in there, and I think they was able to get four turnovers, and that was hard for the Saints to overcome. So experience, that helps, but you have to be able to hang on to the ball when you get into the playoffs.
You know, taking a look ahead, as far as the Super Bowl is concerned, you know, in the open, I was talking about the psychological and the mental side of the game, whether it's, you know, these conference championship games or the Super Bowl, of course. So just talk about, as a player, everything that comes along with that stage or those stages and all that goes into it, you know, from – you know, not only the head coaches, the coaching staff, and maybe other people involved, and just the mental approach for the players.
Well, if you get an opportunity to play in a Super Bowl, what you want to do is you want to come away victorious. I was had the pleasure of going to two, won one, lost one, and losing the Super Bowl, you never get it out of your system. But I'm so fortunate that I was able to be a part of one, to win the Super Bowl. You look at the Buffalo Bills in the 90s with Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and Bruce Smith. All those guys went to four straight. And unfortunately, they went away 0-4 for his Super Bowls. And that's tough. So I think from a mental standpoint, the players just got to take one play at a time, one quarter at a time, and one half at a time. You got to stay in the moment. You can't get ahead of yourself. I know it's as fun as fans like we are to talk about going to the Super Bowl, but you best believe the Chiefs and the Bills are thinking about that AFC Championship, and Tampa Bay and Green Bay are thinking about the NFC Championship. So I wish all the teams good health, and may the best team win.
George, what about the fact that, am I right on it, that there's never been a team from a host city like Tampa Bay to ever play in a Super Bowl in this, in their home stadium, right? That's my knowledge. I can't think of one.
That has never occurred, but it could.
That's what I said. Brady could do it again. Would that be another stat he would have?
Well, like I said, Tom Brady will go down as the best quarterback to ever play in the National Football League. You know, just look at his resume, and whether he wins on Sunday or not, I think he has that title, but you cannot count him out. He is unbelievable.
Yes, he is. Where are you going to be watching the game, George? Are you going to be at, are they going to allow you to be at the stadium on Sunday, or do they, being a board member, or do you have to watch it away from the stadium?
All board members are welcome and have tickets for the NFC Championship and the Super Bowl, if they ever would, you know, if they were to go to a Super Bowl. But because of the virus, my wife and I, we're going to just watch it at home and enjoy it like all the other fans around the nation. But they are going to open it up to, I think the stadium seats 80, right at close to 81,000, but they're going to have 6,500 at the game. Yep, so last game they had 6,000.
That's amazing.
They're only going to have 6,500. Excuse me. I'm sorry. They're only going to have 6,500, not 65,000. Only 6,500 at the game on Sunday.
Right.
6,500.
That's going to be incredible. George, how can people, you've stayed longer than we expected, and you're always so good to us and generous with your time. How can people follow you on social media, and can't wait to see you whenever we get rid of this virus? Love to have you back in Greenville, man. We miss you.
Well, I miss you guys, and I miss the Pirate Nation. I'm looking forward to, after everything blows over, getting back to Eastern North Carolina and getting a chance to go on campus and looking at the new, seem like every time it's been a while, but every time I go there, there's new buildings, new things going up. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. But I'm on Facebook. So if anybody want to follow me, just find George Kuntz on Facebook. I'd be love to hear from you. And thank you guys for having me.
All right. We'll be pulling hard for the Packers on Sunday, George. Appreciate you so
thank
much,
you
and love to have you back on soon.
Thank you. You take care. Good night.
And obviously, big with the Packers, George Kuntz, for coming on. Bubba, what a treat to have a guy like him. And we'll be pulling hard for the Packers. Nothing against Tampa Bay, but I got to go with my guy, George Kuntz. He's been very good to us. For the podcast, but more importantly, for the Pirate Nation.
Yeah, I'm definitely pulling for the Packers, and one, because of George Kuntz, but then in addition to George and his association with that Packers organization for so long now, I've always liked the Packers, just the atmosphere there at Green Bay, even though I've never had the opportunity to go to Lambeau Field. Just seems the most like a college environment as you could find in the NFL. You know, the city of Green Bay, I want to say, is somewhere between 100 and 110,000. So a little bit bigger than Greenville. And it's more like a college town than what you would typically find. When you think of NFL team, you think of a large city, but that's definitely not the case with Green Bay. And then you factor in other things, like he was just saying a few minutes ago, as far as all the shareholders instead of a typical owner. Right now, after getting that perspective from Dr. George Kuntz on the NFC Championship game, we are going to catch up with Don Beebe. This interview was recorded here a couple days ago, and we got his thoughts on the AFC Championship game taking place at 6:40 on Sunday night on CBS. at Arrowhead Stadium with the Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Buffalo Bills. And let's go to that conversation with Don Beebe right now.
This weekend is the conference championships in the NFL. And right now, to preview the Buffalo Bills at the Kansas City Chiefs, very excited to welcome back into the program the head football coach of Aurora University Division III program in Illinois and Buffalo Bills legend Don Beebe. Coach, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be here, Bubba. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Before we dive into this matchup between your Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs, let's just talk about how's everything been going with the coronavirus over the last 10 months with this pandemic. Just tell our listeners how things are for you and your family and your program in Illinois.
Well, for everybody, it's been tough. In Illinois, it's a little tougher than most states. New York, California, and Illinois are probably the toughest three to be able to move around and do anything. And then certainly for high school sports, it's a complete shutdown, and feel really bad for those kids. And at the college level, we've been shut down as well. But, one thing, the way I was raised, and certainly just listened to different quotes from a guy by the name of Marv Levy, he used to say when it was tough for everybody else, it was just right for us. So that's the kind of the mantra that I've kind of instilled in our guys here at Aurora University, and we're just going to make the best of the situation we have and hopefully look forward to a spring of playing five games in a conference tournament.
Yeah, no doubt. Very glad for those young men that they'll get to play hopefully five games on this spring, as you say. We're kind of switching gears now. I know you certainly have to be very proud and excited about what Sean McDermott's ball club's doing with the Buffalo Bills. So let's just talk about, the Bills having more success than they have in quite some time as they head into Kansas City this weekend to hopefully, from your standpoint at least, knock off the defending Super Bowl champions.
Yeah, they have quite the feat, that's for sure. It's in Kansas City, as we know, which is a very difficult place to play. But yet, the fans will be limited, as we know, as well. So it won't be the same atmosphere that, normally have in the past. It's been hard to win in Kansas City. There's still a question mark how well Mahomes is going to be able to feel, if he's going to be able to play or not. That'll be a key factor in this game, for sure. But I just, one thing about the game of football, it's played on emotion. And I think the Bills are playing with a lot of emotion right now. And they have the whole city backing them. And they're playing, Josh has those guys playing well, Josh Allen. And I think that they're going to be, even in Kansas City, they're going to be real tough to beat. So we'll see. And hopefully we can pull this thing out and get to another Super Bowl and finally win this crazy thing.
Yeah, obviously it's not the normal atmosphere that you would have at Arrowhead Stadium, but watching some of that Kansas City-Cleveland game last week, it seemed as though, I don't know if this is just because of everything that's going on this year and you're used to seeing hundreds or maybe even no fans in the stands, but 17,000 or so in Kansas City seemed like a lot more.
Yeah, it really does. I don't know if it's the way that stadium is built or what. But Kansas City people, those fans are diehard blue collar fans as well. So they just never sit down and they just keep going, kind of like Buffalo. That's why those are two very hard places to play. But it's the championship game to get there. And I've always said this, Bubba, that the greatest feeling as a player and as a coach is that feeling that when you win the game to go to the show. It's the greatest feeling you can have. Winning the Super Bowl really is not the greatest feeling, even though it's an amazing feat. But as an athlete, when you win the Super Bowl, it's kind of like, okay, Monday rolls around. It's like, okay, now what? It's kind of anticlimactic a little bit. But when you win the championship game and you're going, man, this is the greatest feeling ever, And that week or 2 weeks before the Super Bowl is just time of your life and getting into the biggest game, that there is in sports.
Before we come back to this matchup this weekend, and you talked about your experiences on winning four AFC and championship games during your times in Buffalo, and you beat the Raiders, Broncos, Dolphins, and Chiefs, ironically, in the last one in 93. So what are some memories that really stand out? There was only one of those games that was decided by less than 17 points, and that was that 10-7 decision over Denver.
Yeah, that Denver game was really a defensive battle. That's back in the day when Denver's defense was amazing. You know, they played that cover two defense, and it was hard for us in that no huddle offense. That was one of the toughest defense we faced. But, I remember beating the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game with Joe Montana quarterback, and Bruce Smith knocked him out of the game. And Joe got a concussion in that game, and we went on to the Super Bowl. Man, I tell you, first of all, let's just say this. There's nothing like playing in Rich Stadium back in the day, and the Bills fans, it is absolutely the greatest time of my life. And those are hard to replace, those times. And what made it great was the family atmosphere that we had in Buffalo with the players, the coaches, everybody got along, and then the fans. You know, Buffalo is a unique town. It's a unique relationship with the players and the fans. And I know Josh Allen, all those guys, they're experiencing it now as well. And those are the best of times. And I know exactly how those players are feeling right now because they got a city that's crazy, which I feel kind of bad with the whole COVID thing. And, you know, here we are 25 years later, we're finally back in it, and we're making a run here, and nobody can go. You know, 6,500 people, I mean, that's nothing. You know, that stadium holds, mid-70s, is it? And I just feel bad for the people that can't get into games these days. Leave it to Buffalo to win a crazy Super Bowl in a COVID year, you know? But I just know this, if they pull this off and win it, that town is going to go crazy. I mean, it's going to be a scene that's probably not been seen before, and how crazy that's going to be. COVID or not, those people are coming out.
As someone who was blessed to play in so many games where they had such large stakes, you know, whether it's conference championship games, Super Bowls, et cetera, and just talk about the, you know, as a player, the preparation, both physically and mentally, that goes into it, especially on the mental side, because as part of this show, our guests are hearing from a guy, Brian Kane, who's a peak performance, sports psychologist, that kind of deal. So just talk about that and what it was like with Coach Levy and that staff getting you guys prepared as well as getting yourself prepared.
Well, I know that I owe a lot of credit to the success that I've had as a coach to Coach Levy and Rusty Jones and people like that. Rusty Jones was the strength and conditioning coach of the Buffalo Bills during those years. And why I say that is I have learned from some of the greatest minds ever how to keep a person mentally fresh and physically fresh throughout a long season. So that when you finally get to the playoffs, you're physically ready and mentally ready, because you're right. How you treat your body, both physically and mentally, is what you're going to get out of it, you know, during the course of a game. And Rusty Jones was so good at conditioning at the right time, how to condition, when to condition. What to eat, nutrition. He was so good in nutrition. And then the mind, I think Marv was so good at just keeping us fresh, you know, not beating you down every day in practice, just keeping you fresh, giving you time off when you felt you needed it. He was so good at that. Think about this for a second. I mean, during our heyday in training camp, now, mind you, training camp, we had a group of 4 to 8 guys would golf 18 holes a day in training camp. We would go to practice, go play 9 holes, come back, get the next practice, play another 9 holes, and then make it to dinner and then meetings until 10, 11 o'clock at night. That was our regimen during training camp. Well, that's crazy. And I think because of that, it gave us the ability to play a whole extra season in 4 years. We actually played 5 seasons in 4 years, and with all the playoff games that we played. And so that's the just true testament to a guy of Rusty and Marv and everybody involved in that organization at that time. And I use a lot of that today, Bubba.
I can imagine so. You certainly have a wealth of knowledge and experience in many regards to draw on as a coach now at the Division III level in the NCAA with Aurora University and everything that you have going there with the Spartans. But getting back to this matchup, you talked about Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen briefly, but just remarkable numbers, video game-like numbers those guys have put up, and Josh Allen's numbers are Bills' organizational records. And so you look at 4,500-plus yards, 37 touchdowns, and then a completion percentage of nearly 70%. How do you see this one playing out? Most people see it being a pretty high-scoring game.
Well, Josh is playing at a high level, but just to his credit, I mean, a lot of that is due to the systems that are run now. I mean, we really, in the early 90s with Jim, was the innovators of the no-huddle offense, and it's morphed into what it is today where, you're passing it, holy smokes, you're passing it 70 times or 70% of the game, you know. We had Thurman Thomas in the backfield. We didn't need to throw it that many times. So, I mean, the running game and passing game is kind of, you know, you see a lot more receivers catching 60, 70 balls, you know, 100 balls. That was uncommon back then. So it's just a different game. But the completion ratio is what I look at. I mean, with 70% of completing your passes, that's impressive. And then I think that's an area that he's gotten way better at over the last several years. And I think every elite quarterback from Joe Montana all the way to Tom Brady and everybody, you know, that's going on today, Drew Brees, I throw in that category, are great completion ratio guys. I think it's the number one stat in quarterback. And to be honest, if you don't complete the pass, what good is it, right? So I think that's where Josh has really matured and has stepped into, yeah, absolutely MVP level. I mean, he's got to be in that conversation, you know, and you're going to see two of the best that are playing in the game, you know, playing this weekend. And then you flip the channel and you're going to see two of the best playing in the other game as well with, you know, with Brady and Rodgers. You probably have four of the best quarterbacks playing right now in the league. Hence why they're probably where they are.
Yeah. And the Kansas City run defense has been very suspect, but like you said, and that's not what Buffalo does. Buffalo's not about running the football. They're more about that aerial attack with Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. And as a receiver, I just wanted you to talk about Stephon Diggs. And I know most people think that he's probably the best route runner in the league.
Well, actually, this may sound shocking. I think Adam Thielen is a better route runner. Don't get me wrong. Stephon's a great route runner, but he learned from one of the best. I've coached wideouts in House of Speed Academies for 23 years. And so, you know, knowing what to do and how to work a guy, I would say Stephon's in the top 10 for sure. But boy, I'd put Adam right there, one of the tops, maybe even top one or two route runners in the National Football League. That guy is something else watching his film. And, you know, and it's interesting. I think Stephon really took a lot of notes. I think Stephon would even admit it himself, you know, when he came into the league and he was watching Adam every day in practice. And I think he learned from one of the best. And I think, you know, the one thing Stephon has is just tremendous athletic ability, you know. And when you have those two and then be able to learn from somebody great like Adam, I mean, that's going to bode into one awesome receiver. And I think that's what you're seeing. But, yeah, you know, as anything, you got to have the compliments with it. You know, this Cole Beasley now, he, you know, this guy, he just goes about his business, doesn't he? Catching 6 to 8 balls every game. You know, you have your big play guy in Stephon, but the guy that I really like, to be honest with you, those guys that move the chains, those tight ends, a slot receiver like Cole, it just gets those chains moving. And I think that is just critical third down stuff, you know. And teams that typically do well on third downs are typically your teams that are winning ball games. It's a big stat in the game. But yet, Buffalo has some weapons. There's no question. It's going to be an interesting deal. I'm just glad that Kansas City won't have the fans that they will, because I remember playing there on a Monday night one time. I think that was the game Derek Thomas had six sacks. We couldn't hear a thing. Poor Jim couldn't hear. And Howard Ballard, I think, was our left tackle. I felt sorry for him. Couldn't hear a thing. And Derek just got the jump. And thank God that's not going to be the atmosphere.
These two teams, they had met back at the end of October, Kansas City winning 26-17 in Orchard Park. So, obviously, the Bills are playing much better now on both sides of the ball. And so, to just talk about, I know in that one, the Chiefs, you know, they really were able to run and throw it extremely effectively. So, how do you see it playing out this time around as far as the Bills' defense against the KC offense?
Well, first of all, it's always hard to beat a good team twice in the same year. So I'm actually glad they did lose that game. You know, I think you'll learn a lot. I think this is where good coaching comes in. You're going to see some, you know, and I will say this, I personally think Andy Reid is the best offensive mind in the game right now. I think he's the best play caller and play designer in the game. And there's some really good ones. But I think he is somebody that's been around a long time, and he learned from the best, going all the way back to learn from Holmgren, and Holmgren learned from Bill Walsh. And, you know, I just think that's the case. But with that being said, I think our defense is going to have to play really aggressive. You can't let a guy like Patrick, especially when if he is hurt, can't let him sit back there and just pick you apart. You gotta disrupt him. And I mean, that's the way you beat Brady as well. You know, Brady is the kind of guy where you rush him inside and make him get outside the pocket. And I don't think you can do that with Patrick unless he's not feeling very good. Patrick is a guy that can hurt you with your feet. Same thing with Josh, though. You know, Josh can hurt you with his feet too as well. So I think we just got to get to Patrick. We gotta just not let him sit back there. We got great DBs, some of the best in the league. So I like our chances. I really do. I think our defense is going to play a lot better this time.
You talk about getting heat on the quarterback. I saw a statistic within the last couple of days that in that game against the Ravens, that the Bills were able to get significant pressure. It was just something like 37% of the time, and it came from 11 different players.
Yeah, that's going to be – that was the key to beating Lamar. You know, I mean, you can't let a guy like that just sit back there. But Lamar can really kill you with his feet, you know, better than any quarterback in the league right now. That's – I don't think anybody argued that point. And still we were able to keep that to a minimum. I think if they can have that – if they can play with that kind of fortitude that they did against the Ravens, I don't see the Bills losing this game at all if they can keep anywhere close to that kind of defensive play.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And should be a very entertaining matchup for sure. 6:40 Eastern on CBS on Sunday evening at Arrowhead Stadium. And Don, as always, we appreciate your time. And maybe then the Bills will pull it out. And if they're playing in the Super Bowl, we'd love to have you back on the show for a quick visit. If that is the case.
Sounds good, Bubba, and they're going to pull it out, just so you know. They're going to win. I got a good feeling about this.
What a great interview there, Bubba, with Don Beebe. And if a guy knows about Super Bowls, it was definitely him with those Bills teams. And I'll tell you one thing. I really, really, really like the Chiefs, but there's something about that Bills team, Bubba. I don't know. Don't want to jinx them. And On the NFC side, I really, really like the chances for the Packers. Aaron Rodgers has played unbelievable this year. And I love, you know, hey, you got to tip your hat to Tom Brady for what he's done. I'm not saying the Packers are going to win because we had George Kuntz on and how much we think of George. I just think that Aaron Rodgers is playing lights out right now. No question about it. And we'll see how things play out there, folks. It's going to be two interesting matchups in the NFL on Sunday, and we'll see how they play out. And certainly we'll have them back on. George and Don, we may have a repeat performance if they both get in there, but we'll see how that plays out on Sunday. One thing's for sure, Bubba, we were talking about the mental game, and no matter what sport you're playing, mental
is the biggest part of the game and how you compose yourself. And I know that our next guest, wow, it's just amazing to see how much that is finally being acknowledged, how big that is, certainly when it comes to whatever sport you're playing in. And the mental performance is just as important as anything else. So I know our next guest, one of the great things about him is he works with ECU baseball, and head coach Cliff Godwin is looking for any kind of advantage when it comes to that. And he proves that he's top notch when it comes to coaching, having a mental coach, if you will, a sports psychologist, if you will. And I know our next guest is going to definitely enlighten us on that aspect of the game.
Yeah, we caught up with Brian Kane of Peak Performance on Monday evening, had an excellent conversation. This is about a 20-minute conversation, and talked a variety of topics, like you already mentioned, Dave, including leading off with his association with East Carolina baseball down through the years, and his recent conversation with East Carolina baseball over 3 days last week. So enjoyed this conversation with Brian Kane of Peak Performance.
Well, last week we had Cliff Godwin, the head baseball coach of the East Carolina Pirates. And Bubba, we mentioned this guy in the interview. Very excited to have him back on the program.
Absolutely. And Dave, as a coach, you're obviously always trying to get that competitive edge, you know, developing your players mentally as well as physically. And welcome back in from Peak Performance, Brian Kane. Brian, we appreciate you coming on.
All right, thanks for having me, guys. Always a great day to be in Greenville.
No doubt about it. Very excited having you on. Me and said baseball season starting up, and I know you had a chance to spend time with the team and the coaching staff last week. How did it go?
It's fantastic. I mean, that's one of the things you're always going to get when you're getting with the Cliff Godwin coach team, is the players are going to be prepared, they're going to be locked in, and I felt like, you know, we were ideally going to be able to do this in person, but obviously during a pandemic and the way things shake out, we moved it to being virtual. And I was actually thrilled with the engagement that we got from the players. I was thrilled with what we were able to implement and execute. And it just was kind of a reaffirmation to me that you can actually be very productive over virtual and over Zoom with the right preparation and with the right mindset going in. I think so many times now during this pandemic, we've all been moved into this virtual online world. And I think if we just press pause and take the right mindset with what we're doing, we can accomplish everything that we would do in person and maybe even more in some cases.
Brian, for someone who's not familiar with you, obviously I've seen your stuff. We've had you on the program before. But for someone who may not have seen some of your videos on YouTube or your website, just talk about what you do and, you know, give us a glimpse behind the scenes. Obviously, you can't talk about everything. There are certain things that you wouldn't want to talk about. But just talk about and give us the Cliff Notes version of what you do with Peak Performance.
Yeah, so if you think about the way that we train athletes physically, we do drills to develop skills, and a collection of skills is a skill set. So if you take a shortstop has a different collection of skills, a skill set that they need to be successful than a pitcher. So let's take that shortstop and say, okay, what are the skills individually a shortstop has to have? Lateral movement and arm strength would be two of them. Well, what are drills that I do to develop lateral movement or arm strength? Well, if we take arm strength, the drill you're going to do is you're going to throw weighted balls. Another drill you're going to do is you're going to do long toss. Another drill we're going to do is the weight room. Those are drills that develop the skill of arm strength, which is part of the skill set of a successful shortstop. Another skill a shortstop has to have, lateral movement. What's a drill we do to work on lateral movement? We'll do reaction drills. We'll do agility ladders. We might do some certain cone drills where we're working on planting a foot and cutting. So I do those cone drills and ladder drills to work on my skills of lateral movement, which is part of the skill set of being an elite shortstop. So if you understand, I do drills to develop skills, and every athlete, every position, any sport has a specific skill set. Well, I look at mental toughness as a skill set, and we want to take it from the clouds where everyone talks about being mentally tough and put it into the dirt where it's tangible and we can actually do drills to develop the skills that make the skill set of mental toughness. So mental toughness is a collection of 10 skills. Those skills are having an elite mindset, motivation and commitment, focus and awareness, self-control and discipline, keeping the process over the outcome, using meditation and mental imagery, routines and habits, which baseball is full of routines and habits, time management and organization. Those are the eight skills we want every player to develop. And then I work with the coaching staff on helping them train those eight skills, but then also the 9 and 10, which skill 9 is leadership, skill 10 is the right culture. So what I do when I work with East Carolina baseball is I help Coach Godwin and the staff better understand, okay, here's the drills that you can do to develop these 10 skills that we just listed to make the skill set of mental toughness. And you find players that, you know, get to the East Carolina level because they've got a tremendous amount of ability. But when they get to a level where the competition is now even, you're playing against you're playing in one of the top baseball conferences in the country, right there with the SEC and the ACC. You know, you're playing in one of the top conferences in the country. And when you're playing at that level, the game becomes more mentally challenging because everybody is good. So for the high school player who typically hits 500 in high school, they go to East Carolina, hitting 300 would be the equivalent of them hitting 500 or more in high school because they're facing better pitchers, they're playing more games, the competition is better. So they have to learn how to keep the process over the outcome is one of the skills. And they have to learn these 10 mental skills to have mental toughness if they're going to have any chance at going to Omaha, being a national championship winning program, and really give themselves the best chance for success at East Carolina and beyond. So that's kind of the overview of what I'm helping Coach Godwin to do. And, you know, he's one of the best in the country in any sport, whether it's baseball or any other sport that I've worked in, and I work in all of them. He is one of the best I've ever been around in any sport at being able to take the mental performance program and install it into his players so they have the skills that they need to be mentally tough.
And certainly, Brian, when it comes to this, the life skills, all the stuff you're talking about, something that an average Joe like myself, and I won't say Bubba, I'll speak for myself, but for the average person, they could use your stuff too, right?
100%. I mean, I think that's the beautiful part about the mental game, and what helped me kind of gravitate to it is as a former college baseball player at the University of Vermont, you know, I went out to Cal State Fullerton to do my master's degree in sports psychology. And the reason why I went to Cal State Fullerton to do my master's degree was I had the chance to be a volunteer assistant in their baseball team. I wanted to be a college baseball coach. And when I got there, after about 2 months, I realized that the thing I liked most about coaching wasn't necessarily how to throw a curveball or hit the ball the other way. It was how do you help players create the skills that they need, not only to succeed in baseball, but to succeed as students and to succeed as people in life. And that's the thing I think that you get as a player when you go play for Cliff Godwin at East Carolina is you're not just going to become a great baseball player. You're going to be successful as a student. I think they put down like a 3.5 GPA this fall semester during a pandemic. And they're also going to be successful when they leave there. And I think it's why you see somebody like Colby Bortles from Ole Miss who comes back to East Carolina because he sees the value that you get in being involved with the Cliff Godwin baseball program, not just as a player, but as an overall human being. I mean, anytime I get the chance to work with East Carolina, I always come out of there feeling like, okay, I got to up my discipline game. I got to up my attention to detail. I got to up my toughness and my accountability to get onto that level because it's super elite what they're doing there.
No question about it. When you look at Brian, I know one of the polls came out, and when we were talking to Cliff last week, we didn't mention it because obviously polls don't matter to him, and I totally understand. But I mean, a top 13 program, just want to brag about him, and obviously he's smart enough to have you because that competitive edge we were talking about, the mindset. For example, when you're getting to the regionals, super regionals, as we did 2 years ago at East Carolina. You're talking about down to the final eight. I'm sorry, the final, I beg your pardon, 16 teams in the country. And you're talking about competitive edge. I know that that will help them eventually get to Omaha. That's such a big topic in Greenville. But these skill sets that you're talking about is the difference between making it to Omaha and not.
100%. And I was actually with the team down in Lubbock when they, you know, were 90 feet away at Texas Tech to go into Omaha. And the challenging thing is there's a lot of good teams in college baseball. And when you're talking about playing one pitch at a time, and if you listen to Nick Saban talk, that football coach at Alabama, he says it as one play at a time, is the competition is really good. So you've got to look everywhere to get yourself that competitive edge. And, you know, it's fun to be able to help Coach Godwin establish that in Greenville. And I think for the people listening with us right now, if they're wanting to learn a little more about the mental game of baseball and some of the things that I'm working with the program on and some of the things that, that Cliff's doing from a mental game standpoint to give them that competitive edge, because I'm sure we got parents on here that are baseball coaches or some high school coaches or people just want to learn more about the mental game. So when they watch an East Carolina game and they see their players looking at the bat, taking a deep breath, or they see a Jake Kuchman or wipe off the pitching mound and step on and take a deep breath before he looks at home plate. If they go to briankane.com/baseball, I made a video where it's a 60-minute masterclass. It's free, where I basically walk you through, hey, here's what the mental game of baseball is. Here's how you do it. Here's how you would see it if you were just a casual fan, so you would know more of what's going on and what those players are doing to give themselves the best chance to compete one pitch at a time and give themselves the best chance for success.
Brian, before we shift gears a little bit, did you get Coach Godwin in a swallowing fire, breaking boards with his head or anything like that since you weren't on campus?
Well, no, we didn't do any of that, but there was a pretty good dance competition going on there. And I will say that Ryder Giles has the best moves in that East Carolina locker room for sure. Proven in our seminars.
That's funny. I've gotten to know his father, Rick, pretty well over the last couple seasons, and Ryder's a tremendous talent, and I'm glad he's a Pirate. But kind of shifting gears a little bit, just, Dave brought up, implementing everything you do, with the business world or just the average Joe, as Dave said. Just talk about what you do in terms of the last 10 months and doing what you do in a worldwide pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, it's all everything. I was traveling 250, 280 days a year, and I've been on a plane once since March. And, you either adjust or you become extinct, and whether it's a pandemic or no demic, you have to constantly be able to adapt and adjust. And I'm a person who's a creature of routine by habit. I like to be very structured in routines. I mean, I literally have on my calendar what I'm going to eat, when I'm going to eat it, and I call it eating on the odds. I eat at 7 a.m. until 7 p.m. every odd hour. I know exactly what I'm going to eat. So I like that structure. I like that routine. So being able to adjust and go from being 280 days a year on the road to being home, you have to stay patient with yourself. You have to, also, I think, become a person who's able to adapt and adjust, but also create routines. And one of the best routines I've established coming out of the pandemic, two things. One is a morning journal. These are both in my AM routine. And when you wake up early in the morning, typically that's the only time you have to yourself. Like once I live in Arizona, once 7 o'clock hits in Scottsdale, Arizona, and it's 9 o'clock on the East Coast, my phone is blowing up and I got meetings with teams I'm working with on the East Coast, et cetera. So I have to get up at 5, which means I have to go to bed around 8. So when I get up, my first 15 minutes are just movement. I'm getting myself awake. I go to 15-minute journal block where I sit down and I basically ask myself, okay, based off of yesterday, what do I need to start? What do I need to stop? What do I need to continue? And Cliff has his team do a weekly start, stop, continue. So if the one thing you can take, any average Joe or any average Bubba can take off of this is what do I need to start? What do I need to stop? What do I need to continue? Write that down on a daily basis. And it doesn't have to be long. We're talking bullet points. Like my start today was start going, getting up at 5 a.m. Stop working past 6 p.m. Continue journaling when you wake up. So I'll do a 15-minute journal block. It's about 5:30 in the morning at this time. I'll go in the gym and do what I call a 5x5x5. So it's 5 exercises, any exercises, doesn't matter what, 5 sets, 5 reps. So today was body weight squats, pull-ups, push-ups. I think I did lunges, and then I did like a 20-second plank on each side. I don't need any weights for that. All I need is a pull-up bar. And so I do that, and then I will go for like a 30-minute bike, jog, run, some kind of cardio, and that's how I start my day every morning. It's like a 90-minute routine, and I feel like that sweat before screens routine where I take the time to invest in myself has been more consistent than it's ever been because I've had more control of my time because I've been home. And I think that's the one thing I would share with people is create yourself an AM routine, reflect on your day and say, what do I need to start, stop, and continue, and sweat before screens. Invest in yourself. And take care of you with all the health benefits that come from movement and exercise and activity before you go into your workday or before you start getting infiltration from other people by going on social media or TV or whatever it is that you do.
Brian, as far as obviously the NFC and AFC championship games are coming up this weekend, and I kind of smile really big right now thinking about earlier, I knew we were doing the interview with you today, and
one of the things that one word came to mind is expectations. And when you look at a guy like Tom Brady, he's most people would think that he's over the hill because of his age and being an athlete. And here he is again, and in the now not the AFC championship, but the NFC championship. It just seems like it's his expectation. Hey, I'm going to be there. And his speaking of mindset, look, he's right back there, one game away for another Super Bowl.
Well, you know, it's his 14th conference championship game, which is just incredible. And, you know, I would say bigger than expectation, because I would tell you that Drew Brees would have expected to be playing next week too. And I think at that level, they all expect to win. But execution trumps expectation all the time. Like, Cliff Godwin expects to win the American Conference. Well, so does Todd Whitting at Houston, right? So does the guy at South Florida. Like, they're all expecting to win the conference. But expectation takes you nowhere. It's the execution on top of that expectation that takes you where you want to go. And the only expectation that we have is that we is to perform at our best. And then asking yourself, well, what do I need to do to perform at my best? Because if I perform at my best in baseball, I give myself the best chance for success. I mean, we say it all the time. The best team doesn't win. It's a team who plays the best. I mean, just go one state south of you guys. Coastal Carolina should not have won a national championship in college baseball. They shouldn't even get out of the state. I mean, South Carolina and Clemson have better players. But the best team doesn't win. It's a team who plays the best. And their coach, Gary Gilmore, took them to a national championship, right? I mean, that's the thing you get is it's not the best team who wins. It's the team who plays the best that wins. And how do you play the best? You're not even talking about expectation. You're talking about execution. And in Tom Brady's case, it's execution one play at a time. And, you know, that's, I think, what's made him so good is his ability to go one play at a time, his ability to be in control of himself, his ability to execute on a consistent basis, regardless of the stadium, regardless of it's New England in the freezing cold, or if it's Tampa in 80 degrees. The guy executes better than any quarterback in the history of the NFL, and that's why they win.
Well, Brian, certainly we're very excited to have you on with right here preseason. February 19th is when Cliff Godwin opens up with Rhode Island with the Pirates. Anything before we go, as far as we were talking about expectations and execution, but for the Pirates to have a great season, what do they need to do?
It's real simple. They just need to execute on what they call the Pirates' mission. And if you ever get the chance to walk inside of the team room at East Carolina, they have listed in there what's called the Pirates' mission. And if you go back and you go into YouTube and you type in Cliff Godwin press conference, you're going to hear Coach Godwin talk about this at his first press conference with East Carolina. And he talks about the Pirates' mission, and Pirates is an acronym for purpose, having a plan for everything we do and a reason why we do it. Integrity, doing what's right at all times, even when nobody's watching. Being responsible and having the power to choose our response in any situation. Having the right attitude, being an energy giver, having the toughness and the ability to embrace and overcome adversity and anything that comes your way, which is going to come their way a lot in the pandemic. Excellence, choosing to live a lifestyle to be great, and being selfless, putting we over me and executing our role for the team. So I think the thing that's going to give East Carolina an edge is their ability to live the Pirates' mission. And they have a roadmap. They have a game plan. Does that guarantee they're going to win an American or win a national championship? No. Because we don't control the outcome, we participate in it. But what it does guarantee is it gives East Carolina baseball players a guarantee that as a player, as a student, and as a person, if they live within alignment with the Pirates' mission, they're giving themselves the best chance for success in everything they do.
Brian, before we let you go, go ahead and plug your website and, you know, where folks can follow you on Twitter and other social media.
Yeah, thanks, Bubba. It's easy. If they just go to briancain.com, briancain.com. If they go there and go to briancain.com/baseball, they'll find a free masterclass I did. If they go to briancain.com and click on articles, they'll find some good articles on there that I've shared about East Carolina baseball and Coach Godwin and some of the work that he's doing that I think is the best in college athletics. And on social media, it's at Brian Cain Peak, briancainpeak, on Instagram and Twitter, and love to be a resource for anybody who's looking to close the gap from where they are to where they want to be and looking to dominate the day.
Brian, thank you so much. Appreciate the great work that you're doing with, in fact, on half of Pirate Nation. Thanks so much for working with Cliff Godwin, the great staff and the great players, and look forward to having a great season. Love to have you back on very soon.
David, Bubba, thanks for having me, and anytime I can be on the Sports Objective, I'm thrilled to be here, and maybe the next time we do this, we can do it live from the jungle during a super regional in Greenville, North Carolina, as we watch the Pirates bagpile on Clark LeClair Stadium, taking the jungle and the Pirate Nation to Omaha.
Hey, that sounds good to me.
That really sounds good, Bubba, doesn't it? Oh, my goodness. That's great stuff there from Brian King. And I appreciate everything. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Bubba, if that doesn't give you goosebumps, I don't know. Check your pulse, right?
Yeah. Darren Hart, obviously, from the mid-90s, chiming in. We've had Darren on the program numerous times, but he said he loves Brian King's energy.
No doubt. You want to talk about a winner? You want to talk about somebody that got it done? Look at him with but he and his brother David, two of the best Pirates ever on the play defense. I thank the world of them and appreciate them supporting the show. That's what Pirates are all about, Pirates supporting Pirates. So I know that there was a big press conference today with Coach Dooley, right, Bubba?
Yep, we caught up with Coach Joe Dooley, and here in just one moment we'll have that for you.
All right, the Pirates, I know that Coach Dooley, with COVID-19, he won't be coaching, but he wanted to obviously do a press conference before the game on Sunday against Memphis, a big game, and certainly Pirates haven't been playing a lot.
Yeah, but Coach Joe Dooley spoke with the media earlier on Friday, that being today, of course, and You know, here's the thoughts of Coach Dooley as his ball club prepares to play for the third time in 33 days.
Hey guys, just be excited. Our guys are going to be excited to finally get to try to play again on Sunday. And we've had a little bit of a disjointed week, obviously, with practice, but a little bit more normalcy, you know, than the last, you know, yesterday and today and hopefully tomorrow. And, you know, we'll get ready to play Memphis on Sunday afternoon.
Coach, I would expect that you're probably out for Sunday. Who's in? Who's out?
I'm out. I can say that. Hopefully not down and out, just out. Rock will coach the team on Sunday. He's got the Memphis scouts, so he'll have it. You know, we'll practice yesterday afternoon. We'll practice again this afternoon. The guys we have out there, and you know, we'll have a couple guys out. And we'll have, you know, one or two guys back.
Joe, you going to be connected in any way during these practices? Have you been connected during these practices? Will you be at pregame, halftime, or are you just going to kind of let Rock handle the game and the staff handle the game?
I watch practice. I can watch it on YouTube. So I watch practices, and I text to the you know, to the ops guys or those guys. We've activated Derek, so Derek's actually on the court right now. But I text one of those guys to go down, and if you want to redo something or reemphasize something, go back on something, I text them, and we can do it that way. And then obviously, we talk about after practice, and we've already talked about today's practice. We zoomed a little bit ago about what we saw against Memphis last night, and we'll go through practice. We'll zoom again about 2 o'clock, go through practice with our guys, and I spoke to our guys pre-practice yesterday, so I'm trying to keep it as normal as possible for them.
Just how do you kind of feel personally at this point? What has this week kind of been like, I guess? Have you ever had to miss a game before? I mean, is this totally new to you or no?
I've never missed a game with the exception of probably when I was an assistant here my first time when I went recruiting. We were bad early, so I'd go recruiting, so I didn't have to go to some of the games. And then I'm probably a game or two at New Mexico, the same thing where I had to go recruiting. But as far as a head coach and assistant, I don't think I've probably missed a game in, you know, probably 25 plus years. So it's different. I mean, it's different for our guys. When you think about it, you know, if we play Memphis on Sunday, it's 3 games in 33 days. That'll be our third game in 33 days. So everything's different for everybody.
Coach, what do you think the experience will be like trying to watch it to the TV? How often are you going to be screaming at the TV, or are you going to try to keep that to a minimum?
Well, it's just different. I mean, it's different watching it on you know, on YouTube. I mean, the biggest thing you miss is you miss the interaction with the guys. I mean, you can't be there. You know, the banter before while guys are stretching, the, you know, if someone did something good, you're standing on the sideline talking to them. That's been weird this year because, you know, even during practice, a lot of times you have to distance yourself. You know, stay at half court or stay towards the sideline, which I don't like. I mean, it is what it is. I usually like to be right on the baseline or right, you know, in the huddle or those type of deals. So it's been a little bit different, but I haven't experienced it, so I really don't know what to expect.
Joe, what do you feel like the areas of concern are when you take on Memphis in general?
I think the big thing is our athleticism, length and athleticism. And then, you know, we haven't been able to simulate because we haven't been practicing really, you know, the speed of the game. You know, we you know, these have been, since we've come back from Christmas, we've had three disjointed weeks. I mean, totally disjointed weeks. And it's no one's fault. It is. But now, how do you simulate, you know, game speed, you know, and then three times in 33 days, and then you take a lead athleticism, and they're in a little bit of a groove. You know, they've been playing every 3 or 4 days, and this is the first time in my coaching career I'd rather be playing than practicing. Usually coaches want to practice. I mean, we're at the point where these guys need to play and get some rhythm and get some routine down and get some game time.
Joe, how are you adapting to the other teams in the conference honing in on Jaden Gardner? It seems like he's having a tougher time with defensive sets that other teams are trying to give you from an offensive standpoint.
I don't think anybody's played him any different than they did a year ago. I mean, he's had some at the rim that he missed. He's had some shots that he'll make. I just think in general, I think we're a little off kilter. I mean, it's been, you know, he missed a lot of the preseason. He missed about 5 weeks of the preseason. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and we didn't practice on Fridays. So, you know, for him to get in a rhythm, he needs some minutes and some reps and also some rhythm with his teammates, and they need to.
Coach, to follow up on Mark's initial question, player-wise, right now, if you were tipping this afternoon, how many would not be available, or will you not really know that until Sunday?
We've got a pretty good idea. We've got some guys that'll definitely be out. We've got some guys in contact tracing that'll be out. The weird part is usually when you factor in game preparation. You factor in so-and-so has a sprained ankle or, you know, bad hand, so you take him out, and then you start throwing in a couple guys with, that are out of COVID, and then the contact tracing. You know, the big thing is just getting guys out. We'll have a couple guys out.
How important is it going to be just to get the ball in the hole and to not have two or three guys that don't happen to show up? You know, even if they're there, to maybe go ahead and get their share and do your part in terms of scoring points. To try to stay in this ball game.
Well, I think the big thing is getting, you know, some of these other guys are getting opportunity. I mean, some of these guys that we've had, you know, Noah missed a bunch of games, you know, early. We had that little groin injury, and hopefully we'll get him back, and that'll give him an opportunity to play again. And I do think that, you know, I think the guys are excited to play. I said to them yesterday, guys, you're playing Memphis on national TV. You should be excited no matter who's there playing or not. I mean, and getting the opportunity to do it and get a good opportunity to play. And it's been frustrating for them, but it's not their fault. Like, let's go ahead and move on down the road and get an opportunity to go.
Joe, did the players and the team get retested today and then those results come back later today? Is that the last test before Sunday?
Well, now that I'm not testing, I can't give you all the details. We do two different types of ones. The antigen tests are usually taken, and you get the antigen test back probably within a couple of hours. And we also take the PCRs. PCRs average probably between, if you take it at 7 o'clock this morning, sometimes we get them back as early as 10 o'clock at night. Sometimes we get them back the next morning. So sometimes we take both of them in conjunction. Sometimes it's just the PCR. Sometimes it's the PCR and the antigen. I believe what they did, and I didn't ask this morning, I think they were antigen.
There's a possibility that Sunday still may not happen.
Oh, there's a possibility Monday night might not happen too. I mean, we're all, it's just, you know, it's so fluid. I mean, it's, you know, we went from you know, August all the way through December was, we did great. And then, you know, in a 2 week span, I go back and look, and I don't know whether I got it from one of our players. A lot of this, as we've seen, but the antigen tests are rapid return. So if we get those back, that usually allows us to practice that afternoon. So that way we know that there was. And then the PCRs, what Dr. Harmon describes, is the gold standard of testing. So those usually take a little bit longer to get back. And the way he explained, they're molecular tests, so those take a little bit longer to get flipped.
When you look back on this thing, it's going to be kind of a historic year, the way things have all gone down, and very memorable in many ways. It's been kind of strange and kind of weird, but kind of different, but memorable in many ways, too. Talk about the historic value of what all has occurred and, you know, how this may all shake out.
Well, you know, John Rothstein, I guess today I read this, and this is something when you really think about the dynamics of this. I think he said that 94% of the teams that are trying to play are still playing during a once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-hundred-year pandemic. So I think it's a little bit of a tribute to the medical people and to the kids. I mean, guys, this has been miserable for them, as you can imagine. Just the uncertainty, like it has been for society. So I'll tell you the truth, I'm going to try to forget about as much as possible when this thing is over. This isn't going to be a good history lesson for me. This is going right in the trash can.
Joe, what's the update on your status? I know you talked about it a little bit Monday, but still the same symptoms? Have they kind of subsided?
Oh, I've been fine. I mean, I've had a little bit of a runny nose, but I can't tell whether that was from, you know, walking the dogs or being outside. I come in early in my office and do some work in here in my house, and then usually do something with the, you know, watch tape and do those deals, and lunchtime take a little walk with my dogs and then get back to it. But I've had a little bit of a runny nose, you know, to date. So far, so good, thankfully.
And did you maybe this week to get any clarification from the league as far, is there a set number of guys that need to be available to play? Is it 7 or 9?
Seven scholarship players and one coach.
Okay.
Joe, how much of a concern are you returning to action at game speed, but Memphis probably the most athletic and long team, trying to simulate that after such a long break?
That's the hardest thing. And then the other thing, guys, you know, we talk about this all the time with our staff and everything else. We say, okay, well, let's make these games up. If you watch the NBA right now, they're already complaining about their guys, because here's what happens is you're used to playing 12 minutes a game, and then back-to-back nights you have to play 35, so you get hurt. And I think this return to action and the speed is different. And then we'll go from playing 3 games in 33 days to playing Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday. So that's a different dynamic. Now, usually, you know, you have a usual practice pattern. One of those days will be a walkthrough. Now you're wondering, can these guys recover quick enough? Do you have to give them off a day? You know, give them off Monday, give them off Thursday, which usually would be light practices and preparation. And the flip side of it is saying, well, we really haven't been practicing. We need to have practice time. And then you worry about getting guys hurt, which is always a concern, but probably even more so this year.
Any other questions for Coach, guys? All right. Thank you, guys.
See you, guys.
All right, there's the comments from head coach Joe Dooley for East Carolina. As the Pirates are going to be marching forward, finally playing a game, Bubba, it's hard to believe. The third game in 33 days has been a strange season, but as we said last year for COVID-19, that's 2020. I guess now we could say that's 2021 as well.
Yeah, third game in 33 days, and like Coach Dooley referenced there at the very end, after – having played just 3 in 33 days, they'll play 3 in a 7-day stretch.
That's nuts. And so it's been somebody asked me today how I feel, and then we'll move on, about COVID-19. I said, well, one thing I learned in 2020 about COVID-19 is to prepare and to be flexible. So that's what we have to do with this season, is prepare and be flexible, whether you're a fan, father, whatever the case, or whatever role you're playing.
Yeah, sure. It'll be It'll be interesting to see who's available, who's not available on Sunday afternoon. Hopefully, Memphis is going to be testing okay, so the game will be able to get played. And in Memphis, they defeated Wichita State by 20 points. The Shockers have actually been playing pretty good basketball. So Memphis is coming in seemingly maybe not clicking on all cylinders, but playing probably some of their best basketball of the season. And meanwhile, we're returning from the situation that we've been in. But like Coach Dewey said, as much as I'm not a fan of this saying, it is what it is, and we just have to make the best of it. And the ones that are available, I'm sure we'll go out there and give it everything they have and compete their hearts out. And hopefully we'll give ourselves a chance to be competitive. He said Coach Rock is the one – of course, it's going to be leading the way. He has head coaching experience. He's a seasoned vet and had that head coaching experience several years back down at Lamar for 4 or 5 years, I want to say it was. And definitely are going to be in good hands there. And just got to fight through all the other things that they're currently going through.
It's going to be interesting to see how many players we have. That's what the problem has been. This month is not that we're not playing good basketball, Bubba. I think the problem has just been, it's a coaching nightmare. Who do we have today? And then we go, okay, we have these guys. And then tomorrow, oh, wait a minute. No, you don't. It's just crazy. But anyway, like you said, we'll deal with that the best we can. I know, Bubba, before we go, did you have some roundtable topics or did you want to go straight to our sponsor?
There's a couple things we mentioned. Okay. Lady Pirates have been struggling here lately. I think they dropped five straight now. I want to say they're 5-8 overall, 3-5 in the American. And quite simply, I mean, you can't put the ball in the basket. Out of 13 games, the Pirates have only scored above 58 points in three of those 13 games. So. Tim McNeil and that staff, I'm sure, are really pulling their hair out. The ladies compete hard. They just cannot score. So hopefully they'll figure that out and they'll be able to put some more wins on the board here as we are almost preparing to enter the final month of the season. And something else of note, and Pirate fans who have been around since the Ruffin McNeil era, Coach Ruff's initial staff had Clay McGuire. I want to say he was running backs and special teams coordinator. But Clay McGuire reuniting with an old Texas Tech guy and Graham Harrell out at USC, as Clay McGuire was named the offensive line coach for the Trojans here in the last few days. So that was something that was interesting. And then also, obviously, the Pirates are opening up with App State in Charlotte. App State has a change in offensive coordinator, Tony Peterson, of course, the Pirates' former OC from the Scotty Montgomery era. Tony moved on to Brett Bielema's staff up at Illinois, and Frank Ponce, who had been on Appalachian staff a couple years ago prior to joining Scott Satterfield at Louisville, he will be returning to Boone, and he is the new OC for the Mountaineers.
That'll be really interesting as different coaches, and certainly Appalachian State is a good team, and but so is East Carolina. And but that's going to be interesting, by the way, to see how many fans are allowed for Bank of America Stadium Labor Day weekend coming up. That's going to be a great matchup, and we'll have to wait and see. Folks, get your shots. Please get vaccinated. I'll say this real fast because we're running long. I've had both my shots now. If everybody can get vaccinated, the sooner the better, and that'll let us have more fans, not only if it's whatever the sport may be, but certainly Bank of America in that particular case, and then Dowdy Ficklin in the fall. Be nice to have a lot of fans, Bubba, in Dowdy Ficklin Stadium in September.
Yeah, it really will. Ryan Robinson was on Pirate Radio, I guess it was yesterday, yesterday being Thursday the 21st, but Ryan was just talking about that they're planning on it being a normal season until they hear otherwise in terms of season ticket sales. And and so forth. So hopefully that will be the case. And with South Carolina coming to town, it would be nice to be able to and to have a capacity crowd rocking Dowdy Ficklin with about 50,000 Pirates, and we'll see how the Gamecocks travel if a normal circumstance where they're able to get their 3,000-4,000 tickets.
No doubt about it. Let's pack it, and the only way we're going to be able to pack it is for vaccinations. Bubba, do you have some more topics to talk about?
No, let's just go ahead and pgxgloves.com. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It'll be a nice segue. Speaking of 23 Jungle Tales and baseball, lost one of the all-time greats, Bubba. I was going to talk about that. I almost forgot. Hammer and Hank, Hank Aaron passing away. Very sad today at the age, I believe, of 86. And loved the game. That guy loved the game. Home run king for a long time. Of course, breaking Babe Ruth's record in 1974. And then, of course, I know Barry Bonds has broken that since. But anyway, we're going to miss Hammer and Hank. And I know you as a Braves fan, got to be a big day for you too.
Yeah, no doubt. When you think of Hank Aaron, you think of 715 for sure. You think I can see him now, even though I didn't see it when it happened, obviously. And that was 7 years before I entered this world. But seeing the highlights of that, him hitting the 715 at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium against the Dodgers, and him circling the bases, and the gentleman running up to him in the in the brown jacket, I think it was, shaking his hand.
Yeah.
And soon thereafter being tackled, taken to the ground by Atlanta's finest. That was one of my memories. But just when you think of Hank Aaron and you look at the numbers he produced, I think he never hit 50 home runs. He only hit more than 45 once, but he had at least 14, maybe 15 seasons of 30-plus home runs. And not only was he a power hitter, he hit 305 for his career, and he played 23 years. So hitting 305 for a career with 755 home runs, and just unbelievable. And then he obviously meant more to the game outside of baseball as well, in terms of dealing with things such as racism and overcoming that to be the player that he was.
No question. And with the major leagues finally recognizing the Negro League players, which is really awesome, you think a guy like Hammer and Hank and what he meant to the game. I think the one thing, and we'll move on, but I think he not only was he great, but I think that he was put in that position to be a great statesman for the game of baseball. And after the game, I think meant as much as is on the field as the years after he played off the field was so great. So we're going to miss Hammer and Hank Aaron, dead the age today of 86, but he'll always be remembered as one of the all-time greats and on and off the field. Bubba, baseball is something important to us, and we love ECU baseball. And 23 Jungle Tales is brought to you by pgxgloves.com. It's a great segment. Former Pirate players from different eras, and I'm so excited. It was Bubba's brainchild for season one. Last year is season two. We've had so many great guests on so far, Bubba, and many more to come.
Yeah, really excited about partnering with pgxgloves.com to present the 23 Jungle Tales series. Like you mentioned, second season we've done this. We're five Jungle Tales deep into the 23. So far, we've talked to guys from a variety of eras and spanning nearly 60 years. And we caught up with Calvin Brown. 1987 to 1990 was his career under Coach O, playing first base for the Pirates. We also caught up with Billy Best. A lot of people know Billy Best, even more so, especially younger Pirates, as an Atlanta Braves scout than his East Carolina career. But he was an excellent player, to say the least, for the Pirates, and was inducted into the Hall of Fame back nearly 7 years ago now. And in addition to Billy, we caught up with Earl Boykin. Earl played for the 1961 NAIA National Champions. We heard from right-handed pitcher from East Carolina's recent past, and Trey Benton. And then most recently, we caught up with a Pirate who threw a no-hitter in the major leagues for the San Francisco Giants against the New York Mets back in 2015. And that, is, of course, Chris Heston.
Chris was fantastic. And again, he's one of only 304 pitchers to ever do that. As we looked up that stat while we're doing the interview, to have only 304 no-hitters after all those games, just an amazing feat. And to have a Pirate to be one of those 304 is really, really special. Speaking of special, pgxgloves.com, Bubba, I know that they can get a special 25% off, and they've changed the promo code. It's ECU now, right?
Sorry, having some issue there, unmute myself. But yes, 25% off promo code ECU. If you go to pgxgloves.com, when you check out, all you have to do is enter that promo code ECU, and that is ECU in all caps, as we'll put it on the screen here for you viewers. But that is promo code ECU if you would like that 25% off anything at pgxgloves.com. And he created a Pirate collection, and he's going to have some awesome 23 Jungle Tales shirts that also have the Sports Injected logo and the awesome PGX Gloves logo that you see on the screen there. And that logo is going to be in purple and gold. So definitely be on the lookout for that. We'll put it on our social media. And those, he said, should be up sometime on Saturday, if not sooner. So definitely be on the lookout for those. Sharp-looking shirts. They'll come in at least purple, gray, and maybe black and gold as well.
Thanks to Kaz, Mark Metakazi, a great third baseman under Randy Mazey, and certainly a great baseball player and a great friend of the show and our first sponsor, so appreciate him so much. Bubba, do you have anything before we go, my friend? I know the Pirates have got the big game on Sunday. And we'll have our overtime Sunday afternoon or evening, right?
Yep, we'll have overtime for you on Sunday evening, taking a look back at the Pirates and the Memphis Tigers.
And by the way, friends, I want to remind you of another programming. Corey Glore, the voice of the ECU baseball Pirates, will be with us on Tuesday night. I believe it's 7:30, so we'll have Corey on and lots of great other Pirate under programming coming up as well. All right, for all the great guests, for Kyle from LaGrange Barber, Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond, and you've been listening and watching the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates! Up and lean side to side, set tone with your pirate pride. Put your crossbones up for your pirates. Take no business, roll out the water. Put your crossbones up and lean side to side, set tone with your pirate pride. Put your crossbones up.